Have you not got like a clapper board?
Yeah. Corny claps.
You should get one.
I clap.
We don't know
it
if it makes
really
a difference.
It, but it's just fun. Isn't
feels
it?
Good.
So yeah.
Welcome to this episode of Revy Study Go, and we've travelled north to the North Norfolk, and it's very exciting to be with Reverend Ian Dybel and Reverend Adrian.
You can't have, can I just start? Hi Dave, it's lovely to see you. and it's good to have the Reverend David Lloyd with
us. We nearly
us.
Managed to start
so
it.
I just want to point out, as my children said, you can't actually have Adrian without Ian.
Yes,
it's in
your name.
I have Ian in my name, so my children said I'm not complete unless I have an Ian. There we are.
Many people like that. For Adrian, he's just Adrian. If you're Brian, you're just Brr.
You are Ian plus ADR.
Yeah, yeah, there we are.
What does ADR stand for?
Alternative Dispute Resolution.
Ah, so you resolve all the
things. I think you're overstating my skills.
So we have Reverend Adrian Walton, and also with us, but without a microphone, observing and listening, is Jonathan Boast, who is at Ridley Hall training to be a vicar. So we have a trainee vicar, L-plate vicar, with us. So that's great. And maybe Jonathan will jump in at some point further on. And you guys are up in Weybourne. The Weybourne group. And what is it that is so special about Weybourne?
Oh, how long have we got? I mean, there are some amazing things about it. It's a beautiful place. That's a great start. It's a joy to minister here. We've got six churches in the Weybourne group, all of which are very individual, but all of which have many, many good attributes. So yeah, we'd love being here, but it's also good prophetically to be here.
I've heard this is good.
Because back at the time of the Spanish Armada, there was a saying, and that saying is, "He who would all England win must at Weybourne Hope begin." And Weybourne Hope is the beach at Weybourne.
Is it called Hope?
Weybourne Hope, yeah.
Ah, oh, lovely.
And because the beach drops off really quickly, if you're going to invade England, then you do it at Weybourne.
Got to do it at Weybourne.
So the Spanish, they thought the Spanish would come in this way, all the way through, actually, until the Second World War, so which is why you got all the pillboxes along the North Norfolk coast, because they thought the German invasion would happen along this coast, and particularly at Weybourne. Then off the coast, we have just being built, and the power's just been, the line has just been put in. We have the largest offshore wind farm in the world.
Wow.
Which is so far out you can't see it, which is good. But it's off the Lincolnshire coast and it's off our coast. And the power from that wind, the breath of God, the ruach of God out there, the power for that hits land at Weybourne.
Very exciting.
And so we have this sort of double prophetic belief that something really amazing is happening and is going to happen along this coast, because God can do it. And just because we're in a really small benefice, only 1,500 people live in the benefice, but in our main village, Weybourne, there's only 400 people. But God is about a great work. And what is possible is not dependent upon us or upon the size of the village or the size of the population. God can do anything in any context if we have faith for it.
So it feels like a supercharged kind of prophetic context that you're ministering. And the church has really grown in the last few years. So it would be great to explore that in a bit.
Yeah, sure.
So we'll come to that. Adrian, what's your role in this set up? How long have you been in Weybourne?
Yeah, so I'm Ian's minion. So I'm associate vicar in the Weybourne group.
Adrian, just for listeners who can't see, Adrian is wearing blue dungarees. He has one eye playing the guitar.
Slightly yellow. So I moved down from Blackpool, where I was a vicar in Blackpool, about a year ago. Came to join Ian and the team in the Weybourne group. And I suppose, I think originally, and when we talked about my focus, it was more sort of younger generations, children's families, mission, that sort of aspect of, and then working with Ian and supporting Ian in the mission and ministry of the Weybourne Benefice, which has sort of sometimes say I'm Ian's minion, and I quite like spreadsheets and organizing.
Praise the Lord.
Praise the Lord.
So I get to do that. But I love those little sparks of hope and opportunity. And I'm going, great, we've got a spark. Let's pour fuel on it. Let's see where the Lord's going to take this. So whether it be in youth and families and children's ministry, and also in the more difficult area of mission, which is actually how do we see revitalization and mission in the local church, in a rural context, in a church which is a mile outside the village, or in those places where actually we have to be more creative in how we see mission and church. So that's why I'm here.
Thank you. And quick observation. So moving from Blackpool to Weybourne, any big differences?
Yeah, my car insurance dropped hugely. So
anyone out there who's listening, who's considering ministry, moving to East Anglia, this is the place to
go. It's drier here, car insurance dropped. It's funny, isn't it? Because on one aspect, it's polar opposite. So I've moved from fourth most deprived ward in England, second for crime, huge issues of deprivation and challenge, to a place that's very affluent. We had in 1 year here two antisocial behaviours, and that was a local old guy in the village getting drunk and shouting at someone, whereas in Blackpool we had everything. And when I say everything, it was everything happened on our doorsteps.
And it wasn't Ian, was it?
No, it wasn't Ian. Getting drunk caused a problem. So, polar opposites. But then what's really funny is actually I've come from urban estate-esque, but neighbourhood, very deprived, but a big sense of a neighbourhood in Blackpool. And the sense of community that's there is no different to the sense of community here. Mm-hmm. It's people trying to find out where they are in life and hope and faith and all of those questions. I was a bit like, well, how am I going to translate some of my skills from working with someone who's multi-generational, low hope, low aspiration, to someone who's multi-generational, high wealth and high academia? And I think a year in, what I'm realizing is actually exactly the same issues are in both groups of people. They just present in different ways.
That's so interesting.
Initially, I felt slightly lost in some places. Now I'm starting to find my feet and realizing actually, no, it's there's still the same questions. There's still the same struggles as where we look at it in money, relationships and power issues. So actually, they're the same for everybody in every context. So very different, but then very familiar.
Brilliant. So humanity doesn't change much as we travel around. I just get this, your oozing experience between the two of you. There is a feel supercharged in the room. and there is an ordinand in our presence as well, Jonathan. And so I wanted to, what would you say to someone who is exploring ministry or looking from the outside in? What are the keys from your experience, your perspective, to cracking open rural ministry?
Really good question. I think the first thing that I've learnt in my years as a church leader, both from the things I've got right and the things that I've got wrong, is that your absolute priority has to be your own relationship with Jesus. Because if you think you're there to do stuff, then you won't. You'll end up going pop. So you need to start from a base of your relationship with Jesus. I often quote Charles Haddon Spurgeon, who says, what a church needs more than anything else is a preacher fresh from the closet. And he had a different understanding of the word closet.
I was going to say,
than we do.
Contextually changed there over time.
But yeah, spend time with Jesus. Because Jesus said he'd build his church. He didn't say that we had to do that. And when he says, look, the fields are ready for harvest, he doesn't say, now pick up a sickle or a scythe, or even in our experience here in North Norfolk, go and get a really smart combine harvester. He says, pray. He said, ask the Lord of the harvest to send workers into the harvest field. So our first and constant point must be our relationship with Jesus. Out of that, anything is possible. Because the more we spend time with Jesus, the more we become like him, and the more we reflect him, and he is much more attractive than we are. And so if people see him in us and the things we're doing, then the church will grow. As the Son of Man is lifted up, all people are drawn to him. Always start with Jesus. People used to joke that, you know, you can ask Ian any question you like, the answer's always Jesus. It might look like a squirrel, but it's Jesus. And it is. Mm. So start with Jesus. The second thing is, actually, I'm not sure it matters too much, and I think Adrian's picked up on this as well, whether we're in a rural setting, we're in a town setting, or you're in a city setting. It's ultimately to do with people, and people don't vary that much. So their context might be different, so you might have to contextualize what you're doing. Mm. But actually, the message of what you're doing doesn't need to change. In fact, it shouldn't change. So you can change your context, but don't change the message. And I think one of the problems we've had is that we continue to try to change the message to fit the cultural context. Mm. And that's a really dangerous thing to do, and is never going to work. So I would say start with Jesus. Know that we're dealing with people. One of the things that we struggle with in rural context is the fact that we end up having umpty-umpty-ump different churches. So we have six, and I know some of our wonderful colleagues have 8, 10, 12, 16. It's bonkers. It is bonkers. You wouldn't do it in any other industry, business. You just can't do it. Mm. If you had 16 post offices and you only had one postmaster or a mistress, no one would ever see them. You might be able to buy a stamp at 12 o'clock on a Tuesday, but then you can't do it for another 2 weeks or whatever. It's ridiculous. And you can't build a community. My mum worked in a local post office, and everybody knew her, and she knew them. So all the old people who came to get their pensions, they built a community. Mm. There was friendship. There was encouragement. She knew when someone didn't come to get their pension. So if you connect with people, you'll build community. If you build community, then you're building a place and an environment where people can grow in Christ. So rather than be a service provider, which is what so often happens in rural contexts, you think, well, I've got to put a service in here at 9 o'clock on a Sunday, and you're run ragged. And you cannot build relationship, because you no sooner you're doing one thing, you're flying off to the next. Focus on community. Build community. I say to the church, you know, we're either a loving community or we're nothing. Mm. So we first and foremost build community. And out of that, you'll see growth. And then you can start to do other things in the other places. So when I came here, I was employed as the, although we're not employed, are we? We're given a stipend to live a life, not a salary to do a job. But I was the interim part-time priest in charge of six churches. There was no money. They had to rent out the rectory to be able to pay me anything at all. And there weren't that many people in any of the churches. It was basically special measures. And so when I came for interview, and people were saying, we want this here, and we'd like to see this happen there, and the other, I said, well, look, I'm interim, and I'm part-time. So I can't do all those things. But what I can do is this. So I'm not going to do this, 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 and this. And I think one of the first things as leaders that we need to do is to define reality. So you define the reality in your context. You say, I can do this. I have the gifting to do this and the resources to do this, and therefore we will do this. And for me, that was building the center. Mm. Invest in one place well. Mm. And as you invest relationally and spiritually in that context, then you can see people added. And as you see people added and you grow, then you'll see the finances following that, because finance, money always follows mission. So you do your mission in that context, grow the community. That means then that you have more resources to then say, well, I think now we could start a service in St. Boggins in the Marsh or wherever it is. And so you then do that. And then, so the aim is that we will have a service in every church every week, so that we have community in those places.
So you build from a center.
Absolutely.
Building on relationships, building on loving community, and with under the lordship of Jesus as the primary thing, spending time with him, following his mission and leadership, and then allowing it to grow out of that into the different spaces that you've been entrusted with, but not everything straight away, all the time, everywhere. And so that's some, that must have resulted in some quite difficult decisions.
Yes, and some difficult conversations.
Difficult conversations. And
but then I think we have to have a pretty hard skin and a really soft heart. And be prepared to have those hard conversations, because unless we do have them, then we're never going to break the cycle. We're just going to keep doing the same thing that we've always done, to please the people that have been there and under whose watch things have not happened.
And so the focus that you have as you go into those conversations, because many people would probably think of ministry as caring for those who are in front of them, more like a chaplain to a congregation. But you're talking about being a sort of priest to a parish, looking out at the people who aren't coming to church and saying, well, how do I connect with them?
I think that's right. I agree with all of that. But I don't think it's either or, because I think you are, the best thing you can do for the people you've got is to help them become the people that God has called them to be. And God has called them to be disciples, not people who attend a service on a Sunday. And there's so much more. Jesus came to give life in all its fullness. And I don't see that people who are just turning up to church on a Sunday and only going through the motions of a religious service are living life in all its fullness. And so our heart is actually to see them grow and to see them thrive in their walk with Jesus. And the very best thing we can do, particularly as people get older, the very best thing we can do for them is to give them the ability to have a legacy and to pass on to the next generation that which they have come to know, which is a relationship with Jesus Christ. And so often there's no one to pass that legacy on to.
And yet there's such a longing. So many churches I go to where they say, oh, we don't have any young people. We wish we had them, and and so on. And so has there been a sense of a shift in hope for those who might have perhaps been less convinced at the outset, or concerned about change, or fearful of what might happen?
I think so. I mean, Adrian might be better to answer that, having come in to the context and maybe having had conversations with people who were here at the beginning. I don't know if that's
it's hard. I suppose I haven't had the benefit of speaking to some of the people who maybe, there would have been some people who dropped off and weren't so supportive. But one of the things I love is some real key people at the centre of not just Wayborn but Benefice, who were the people who were praying for Ian to turn up at the start. So they've really stuck in. They, and I think all the revivals we see in history are where people get down on their knees and pray. And they were praying for change and praying for a move of the Spirit. So they're people which are our church wardens and our prayers and our leaders of Messy Church and our people that are stuck in. And it's not just that. I think what's really interesting is the wider connection, especially in Wayborn. And for me, I get to live in a rancho in Wayborn. I get to be part of a local community. People that were really cynical about church, that were slightly cynical about Ian coming in at the start, now love the church and now love the community and love what they're seeing happen. People that were worshipping elsewhere are now at their local church because they're seeing a move of that Spirit. So I think there's something, isn't it, when we carry joy and hope, there's something you just can't argue with, and it becomes something that's demonstrable in life and in the way we walk and talk. And in terms of sort of looking at the adoption scale of pioneering, you get the early adopters, that first follower, and then you get the sort of people that then follow, and then you're always going to get some people that are not really in it, and you get everybody through that spectrum who gradually join and come in. And it's wonderful seeing that whole tranche of people in Wayborn, from the early adopters, and yes, I'm in, and I'm going to make myself a fool for Jesus with Ian at the front, on an action song on a Sunday morning, all the way through to people who now stand with a smile in their face and with joy in their hearts because they've got what God's doing, and that's been wonderful to see.
Brilliant, that's so exciting. And I want to just bring Jonathan in, if that's okay, to just passing the mic across. Maybe we'll splash out on an extra mic one day, but until then. And so, Jonathan, having heard all of those things, you're headed into a church that's at a bit of a crux in a way. It seems like it's at a turning point, perhaps, where some of the systems that have gone before and some of the ways are coming to its, perhaps its final generation of trying to do things in a certain mold. How does it make you feel? What do you think listening to all that's just been said?
I think it's a really interesting time. I've come from a background which is rural churches in Suffolk, and when I felt called, I knew I was called to rural ministry, and to try and do something about the decline there. I have a young daughter, and living in a village where she is the only child that attends church, and in a previous village I was age 40, considered the youth wing, and it's quite disappointing. And when we've been coming up to the North Norfolk coast for around 20 years, and when Ian took over Weyburn, we immediately came here and saw what he was doing, and it was different for me. I am middle of the candlestick, middle of the church, middle of nowhere. and seeing what he was doing and watching it work, coming up every summer and during half term and whenever our daughter can convince us to get to the coast, we come here and she loves it, and we've grown to love it. And it was one of the reasons I felt drawn to Ridley Hall. It's not the tradition that I'm from, the churchmanship that I'm from, but I wanted to stretch and challenge myself so that when I am granted a parish of my own or a series of parishes of my own, I will be better prepared to bring more to them, to the people, to the flock, than simply I have known, because that is really important, to bring more than just you as an individual know.
That's so interesting. Thank you. Because one of the things we see, I notice with the vicars, is obviously because vicars only work on Sundays. We know that, but they all can't kind of go to each other's churches because they're busy. And yet there's so much to see from whilst you're doing placement as you are, Jonathan. Then there's such an opportunity to see, be in a different environment and see how things are working in a different way, and to catch some of that and take it home and put it into your own context. So this is, you're at the beginning of your placement, and so very exciting time. Hope you have good weather, sunshine, and get to enjoy the rest of the time up here. We're going to move into, have a little scene change. Maybe some quick fire questions.
Okay.
So it depends who's going to, is Adrian or Ian? I don't.
Well,
we just see who goes.
Just go for it.
You see who's quickest.
We need a buzzer on the table.
Well, yeah. So they're just they're not all sensible.
Okay.
What's your vicar superpower?
Joy.
Adrian?
Oh, my superpower's my wit. I like fixing things. No, I think my vicar's superpower is actually I like finding the people that are not in church.
Yeah.
So I think that's a particularly important part. Especially for those of us that have been ordained in the diaconal for a deacons, when you read through that, there's a really strong call there to how we reach our own community. And I think that's particularly important. I love that. I love doing that. I love sitting on the wall, chatting to the neighbours, chatting to the people that walk past. How do we reach out to the people that are not in the church and ask the question, who's not in church?
Sorry, when you said it was a quick fire question, I thought it was a quick answer. Sorry.
No,
as well.
It wasn't meant to be as well. I didn't.
I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. It's all good. What is your go-to vicar voice for leading? Do you have one?
No. It's me.
It's you.
Yeah.
Do you have a vicar voice?
I think I do a little bit, and I think it depends on context. I think, I'm a Suffolk boy, rural Suffolk.
Do you change your
messy childhood and And I think it does change a bit. My wife says I definitely have a phone voice and I definitely have a preaching voice. So it changes a bit. I think I'm relaxing more actually now I've been here a year. And maybe I'm starting to find my voice a little bit more local here, which is good.
So that's all right, isn't it?
You're right, boy.
If you had to share the gospel using only animal sounds, which ones would you choose?
Sheep.
Sheep. Any other animals?
It's got to be sheep, isn't sheep? It? Sheep. Because sheep, we are sheep. We're the sheep of his pasture. So you can actually explain the gospel through sheep and shepherding.
And we'll get on to that. I'm excited to hear more about
I'm going to echo good. That. I can't think of anything. I think, I'd go for sheep.
So. Brilliant. Well, let's explore sheep in a bit. Hang on in there. We're going to get there. Mm. If the bishop showed up unannounced, what's the first thing you'd hide?
Nothing.
No, I agree. Nothing.
Great answer.
They know. I think they know us enough to know what goes on. There's nothing to hide. If anything, we'd have to get something out, probably.
Funniest thing a child has said in church, or anyone said to you in church?
I'm thinking of various points when Ian's been giving a sermon on an all-age service, and children have come out with all manner of things, like butterflies, at various points in sermons, and various other things. But
yes, I am regularly heckled, not just by children either.
No, definitely not just by children.
I quite enjoy it. I quite like a good heckler.
I think I remember that, seeing you in all-age mode.
Yeah.
You like to get stuck in.
I do. I like the interaction.
Yeah.
Because it gives me an opportunity to say something about them.
Yeah. I think it also speaks to actually preaching as... I think actually when it's best, it's a conversation.
Yeah.
And it digs into something that's relational rather than something that's just... pronounced. It's a wonderful space when we get into that sort of open dialogue.
Certainly something I really experienced when I came to visit in Weybourne was this really strong sense of community and just conversation. It just felt wired, just everyone chatting and laughing and to the point that, you know, kind of trying to start the service takes a few attempts to
it does
draw people in And an observation as well I noticed is how simple the service format is.
Yeah.
For people with like a small attention span like myself, I could stick with it.
Yeah.
Do you want to just share about what's your, if anyone listening in who's thinking, how would I arrange a family service in a rural context? Do you have a kind of go-to?
I think there's very strong. I think one of the things for me is asking that missional question. If Joe walks through the door, who's never been to church before, how can he engage with what we're doing? Mm. So do we thrust lots of books in our hand, or do we make it really accessible that he can follow step by step through and do things really accessibly? So we're thinking about how does X person come in, get welcomed in, and follow through what's happening really easily without getting lost, is a really important part. So coming back to basics, and we can do that liturgically, we can do that in a whole host of ways, but I think there's a really important question there about how do we welcome people in? How do we make something accessible?
Amazing. And if Joe is listening to this podcast and he's wondering, Joe could be male or female.
I'm married to Joe. Absolutely. Yeah.
So if Joe is listening in and is exploring the meaning of life, exploring faith, wondering if they can summon up the courage to come to church, what would you say to a Joe out there?
I'd just say give it a go. Like, give it a go, Joe. Give it a go. And I think it's hard. I think often what holds people back, and having seen a couple of people in the village who have come to faith recently, is fear and courage. Actually, we understand the scriptures about having courage, but actually walking into an alien environment where you know no one and you think you do not fit and you might come out in blisters, that's a really big thing for most people out there. Mm-hmm. And I think we really underestimate how alien a faith environment and a church environment is for so many people. So it's one of the reasons in my previous church we always had someone not just in the door, but on the outside of a door, on like they were welcomed in. So they saw a face when they walked up rather than a closed door. And they were welcomed into an environment. So it made it really easy to be welcomed in. Oh, this is going on. And one of the things actually I love, if I go in on other church websites, one of the particular things I love is when they do a video of what an arrival looks like. So someone can look at that video and think, oh yeah, they're normal people. Oh no, I'm gonna sit there and oh, that's where the toilet is. Because those questions are where you go into environment. Have I got to behave? Do I need to dress a certain way? Have I got to sit in a certain way? Can I talk? All of those questions. I remember one of the first times I went to church, I went in a suit because I wasn't sure what I needed to wear. You know, and I think we really, as a church, we really underestimate just how difficult it is for people on the outside to step into that environment. Mm.
And I think we need to be aware of what we feel like when we go into an alien environment.
Mm. Mm.
Because church is not, it's what we do. We're part of that, and we have been for years and years and years. So we forget what it's like to go into an alien environment. I went to a village where there was a folk night in the local social club. And I thought, great, I'll just go along and see what that is. Sit and listen, and you know, there's people playing violins and drums and bits and pieces. I went, and there was, it was like tumbleweed. You know, no one spoke to me. and there was obviously this clique of folk musicians who were enjoying their folk, and they didn't want that stranger amongst them.
Yeah. You didn't bring your guitar? Is it Seagull, your guitar?
No, it's a something and something.
Something and something.
So, something. I've had that guitar a long, long time. And I love it. And the church, the people at church particularly love it when I play it for action songs.
I've heard this. Yeah.
They do. They genuinely do. It's a real moment of joy. Services.
And occasionally I'll lead worship, but I'm the worship leader. You know, when you have that like fire thing, which says, in case of emergency, break glass. I'm the worship leader behind that glass. But I went, and it was, no one spoke to me. And they just looked over their shoulder at me. So I sat down, had a beer, and left. And I haven't gone back, and wouldn't go back.
No.
Because I wasn't welcome. I didn't feel welcome. And I think it's really important that when people come, they feel really, really welcome. So I have this thing that I want everybody who comes to church, whatever their situation is, and some people come to church and they're full of joy to start with, and there are other people who've had really bad weeks or actually really difficult lives. But I want their experience to be that they leave church feeling better than when they came in. Mm. And community love does that. Mm. Feeling loved does that. Just someone talking to you and sharing with you does that. We have a couple who are really, really involved in the community and in the church. And they've lived in the village for, I don't know, 20, 25 years. They came to the church 25 years ago. And they were sitting in a pew along with the five other people who were in the church at the time. And somebody came up to them and said, "You're sitting in my seat."
Mm.
And so they didn't come back to the church until they realized that things had changed at the church. And now they've come on. And they've absolutely committed. They're evangelists for Jesus, but also for the church. Mm. So they're sharing in the community. Because they feel part of the community, they feel welcomed and relaxed and engaged with what's going on, and it's not rocket science.
How important is that in your? We haven't really spoken about your own journey of faith. So when you became a Christian, and how important was welcome? How important was love and hospitality in that process?
Yeah. Mm. I'm going to jump in. Is that okay? So yeah. I think I was loved into the kingdom. So I went to church as a kid, but that was nothing to do with God. That was because there were some good-looking girls in a choir, and I was a messy boy in a boarding school for boys with behavioural problems. That was my childhood. I left the army a real mess, and I was homeless and broken, and I bumped into a couple of people called Jane and Chris, and Jane and Chris said, "We've got a spare room when you come and live with us." Mm. And then it got to Sunday, and I thought, great, I'm on a free ride here. This is really good, having been a messy boy in Suffolk. So, and they said, "We're going to go to church." And it was something so safe and just so wonderful about Jane and Chris. I couldn't put my finger on it, but now it was just God's love. that I was like, I'd rather be with them than without them. So they took me to church. And it was a bit weird. And it was a bit wonderful and a bit all sorts of stuff. But Jane and Chris just kept loving me. And they loved me into the kingdom. They absolutely loved me in a way that I couldn't. So that has shaped my theology hugely of what does it look like for us to love people in a way that Jesus loved people. Mm. There's a wonderful book called Love Does by Bob Goff. And it just lists loads of things like when we love people, we do this. When we love people, we do this. And I don't think for us, I don't think there's a call to be ministers without a call to love people and a call to be sacrificial in that. And that's hard. That's hard at times. That's painful at times. That costs at times. That tugs at our heartstrings because God's broken our heart for his people out there. Mm. But for me, loving people is how I was brought into the church. They didn't give me a Bible. They didn't preach at me. They didn't do anything else other than love me and then slowly introduce me to Jesus. So that sense of, I suppose the people use that term, belong, believe, behave. I found a place where I could belong. And then I was like, oh my word, I believe. And then my life started getting sorted out and my behavior changed. Because God loves me, because they love me and they love me first. I know there's something wonderful in that space. So for me, that's hugely rooted in action, in how we as ministers love people.
That's fantastic. Thank you. Ian, is there anything?
No, I think my experience was different. And I came to faith. Life was pretty good for me, to be honest. I had a pretty tricky time as a youngster and suffered some bereavements. But I came to faith. We took our son. Joe and I were married. We had a nice house, had a nice job, good income. So my little empire was quite cozy. But I felt there was something missing. And I'd had a God consciousness and engaged in sort of God conversations throughout my teenage years. But we took our son to church to have him christened and got invited to a Bible study as a consequence. I just thought, yeah, maybe I'll go and listen to what this guy has to say and went through that. And at the end of it, I think it's true. And part of the understanding of the truth of the gospel of Jesus is the love of God. And I experienced the love of God in my own life. You know, Paul writes to the church in Rome and says, hope does not disappoint us because God has poured out his love for us in our hearts by the Holy Spirit. I experienced that. And I've never lost that sense of hope in the gospel, hope for me, hope for others, and that sense of God's love. And I think, so part of my motivation with the gospel, with the growth of church, is I want other people to experience the love of God. Because I just know, I know it. And I want other people to know that.
Fantastic. So we're looking out at a shepherd's hut.
Yeah.
At the end of a garden.
Yeah.
And I feel like sheep, it's a topic, isn't it? That
big topic.
Close to your heart.
Yeah.
Do you want to just share about sheep?
Yeah, I'd love to share about sheep. And it's not just my heart. Actually, one of the great things in the conversations I had with Adrian before, and we had the big conversation about him coming here with his lovely wife, Fran, his children, was that they also love sheep.
Wow.
And so this was something, you know, the hand of the Lord was in this. So my thing with sheep goes back a long way. I've shadowed a number of shepherds, both here and abroad, and particularly in Jordan. I lived in a goat's hair tent for a bit. Very smelly, don't recommend it. Because I wanted to experience what shepherding was like in the first century. Because shepherding, the whole of scripture is shepherding from all the way through. So Abel is a keeper of flocks. And from that moment on, you look at all of the big characters. Abraham had flocks and lots of them.
Lots of them.
Lot had flocks and they had to divide up because there wasn't enough land for them to have both their flocks on. So they split up at that point because of the fact that they were shepherds. And so, you know, Moses. He's a shepherd of his father-in-law's flock in Midian. Mm. Before God calls, so he learns to lead sheep before he leads people. Mm. King David is a shepherd.
Shepherd boy.
Before he leads God's people. We hear God speaking through the prophet Ezekiel about how bad the shepherds of Israel were and the fact that God himself would come and shepherd his flock. Then Jesus comes on the scene, and the only time he describes himself in another human role is when he describes himself as the good shepherd. All the I am sayings are I'm the gate, I'm the way, I'm the truth, I am the vine, etc. But the only time he describes himself in another human role is I am the good shepherd. And I think God's trying to say something to us. And I think the danger is that we can skip over it and think, well, leadership is this or leadership is that, or you know, we got to learn from the strategists, or we've got to learn from the management consultants, or we've got to learn from business, or actually, no, it's none of that. Because I'm, as I think you used the phrase earlier, I'm just a chaplain to my congregation. Mm. So I don't want to hear any of that strategy stuff. That's not, we're church leaders, we're not strategists. Mm. And yet Peter, whom Jesus says of him, you're Peter, you're the rock, I'm going to build my church on you, where he then messes up, gets restored, and in the restoration, Jesus says to him, Peter, do you love me? And he must be thinking, hey, this is it. This is where I get my brief. Mm. This is my mandate for doing this thing that he said I was going to do, which is to build the church, or to have the church built on me. What are you going to say, Jesus? Feed my sheep.
Feed my sheep.
And that's it. And so, in a very simplistic way, I think we need to just say this is the model that the Lord has given to us to understand what leadership and followership really looks like. So let's dig deep with that and learn from it. Because I think one of the problems with the church of England, and I've been involved in strategy meetings and strategic learning communities and all sorts of other things, and there is this sense that it is either big strategy, getting lots of money from the center so that you can do stuff, or it's no, I'm going to hunker down and just look after this very small flock that you've given me, Lord. But a shepherd does both. A shepherd is a strategic pastor. So you, as a shepherd, you need to know where you're going to get the sheep to the good grass. You need to know where the pasture is. Sheep will only lie down if they are satisfied sheep, if they've eaten well. So, you know, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. Well, you've got, as a shepherd leading a flock, you've got to know where the green pasture is so that your sheep will eat and they will lie down. They'll only lie down if they're safe. So if they think there's a risk, so you as a shepherd need to know where the dangers are, where the attacks are going to come from. So you have to have a strategy to know how to get them to where they need to get to. In the desert, you need to know how long to leave your sheep just eating from one particular little bush or one particular little bit of grass, because there isn't very much. I wandered with a shepherd out in the desert in Jordan, and there's not much for them to eat from. So they can overeat, kill the bush, there's nothing next time. So we as shepherds, particularly in the desert, and it may well be said that we are in a bit of a spiritual desert, we need to know where the good sustenance is, how long to leave the sheep in that particular, before we move them on to them, et cetera, et cetera. So I could go on about this for hours and hours.
I feel there's a book coming, surely.
Well, maybe there is. So we are both strategists, because we need to know where we're going and how we're going to get the sheep there, but we need to make sure we're caring for the individual sheep as we do it, because a shepherd is only as good as his reputation. So if you're saying, right, I've got to get to that place, and I've got to get the sheep there, and it's all about programs and it's all about this, and you're not caring for the sheep, you have no reputation. No one's going to want to be part of your flock. So you need to make sure that every sheep hasn't got ticks, hasn't got mites, hasn't got foot rot, that you're shearing them when they need to be sheared, that you're making sure they've got enough water in the context they're in. The shepherd cares for each sheep, because the reason that David says, you know, the Lord is my shepherd, and he's the, and Jesus says, I'm the good shepherd, is because he has the very best reputation as a shepherd. And if God, if we as his under shepherds show people what a good shepherd he is, then people will want to be the sheep of his flock, and so they will join in and be part of that. So yeah, there's much more, but I am passionate about sheep, so much so that we're going to get some, aren't we?
Yep, going to get some sheep.
Any particular type?
Well, we've been looking at Norfolk Horns, which are rare breed, obviously local to this area, and much of the history of the churches in this area, and indeed the villages were built upon the wool from the Norfolk Horn, which is what I've learned from Ian since I've been here. But I think that's what we're looking at, aren't we?
Yeah. I mean, so many of our churches are wool churches. So the worsted trade in Norfolk was built on the back of the Norfolk Horn, which is a sheep brought in by the Saxons. And all of their wool gave the wealth to this area. Most of the churches, we have more medieval churches, as many people will know. We have the best collection of medieval churches in the world in Norfolk, which is a blessing and a burden. But they were built on the back of the money from the Norfolk Horn. So we feel it'd be right to have a flock of Norfolk Horns.
That's wonderful. And where will they be?
We've got a little been offered a little field in Weybourne, which we've had a walk around on a few times, and sort of looking at how we fence that and create that space for that. And I think the thing is, it's not just having sheep for the sake of having sheep, but it's how does it connect? How do we? And I know for Ian has been exploring what does that look like with coaching leaders and helping understand what that looks like. Because I think we see our good shepherd who's for us, but we as pastors, we're called to shepherd our flock, but we're also called, we are sheep as well. And I think there's that duality that we have to hold. We can sometimes forget that we are sheep too, and how we dig in our faith, and what does that look like to be sheep and shepherd at the same time.
Wow, there's so much here. Love to, we could just listen forever on this topic, but I guess what we want to do is we need to bring it to a close, but to say that let's do the Revy Study Go challenge. So I've got my stopwatch out, and it's a very simple challenge. It's not a very good game as well, I have to admit, by this episode, but I'm just going to time you as you list the different villages in your benefice. Ready, steady, go.
Salthouse, Kelling, Weybourne, West Peckham, Bodham, and Upper Sheringham.
Oh, that's fast. 3.23 seconds. I didn't actually hear a word from you.
Well, I didn't think I needed to, because I've discipled Adrian so well that obviously he has got the measure of that, and I think he did it for us.
Wow. That is very fast. Yeah, I mean, because someone we interviewed had, we won't use names, but only had two villages, and it took 2.3 seconds, but you've just covered six in 3.2.
And it's one of the things I think for us as benefits, and it's called Weybourne Benefice, but many of our churches are called All Saints or the Saints, and actually there's something about they're all saints. We want to see the kingdom come for each of our villages, not just Weybourne, but for West Peckham, for Bodham, for Upper Sheringham, for Salthouse and Kelling. Yeah. And for us, our call is to all. That's really important.
Yeah. So it's so exciting to hear you guys sharing your heart. And thank you, Jonathan, as well, for sharing your insights. And want to just say to anyone who's in the Weybourne area, anyone who's exploring, perhaps coming up to North Norfolk on holiday, do pop in, do say hello, do absolutely. Check out the website.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And we'll see you in the pews.
Yeah. Can I just say one other thing, Dave? I know you clearly, but if there are other leaders who are struggling, then we would love to do anything we can to help. Because this is not just about us here. This is about having a hope-filled clergy who can see the kingdom come. And I know the struggles, and I've seen the struggles. And I personally have experienced struggles as a leader. And so we would love to be encouragers as far as possible to anyone that we can.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for that offer, and anyone who's out there that's listening, do take it up.